Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's HandyLink. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. This first segment of our show, we'll hear from Barb Trader from Tash. So tell me a little bit about Tash.
In general, Tash is a almost 40-year-old membership association that was started by researchers in 1975 and has since expanded to include people with disabilities, family members, direct service professionals, both in education and adult services. And every member is committed to a set of social justice values. And our purpose is for advocacy. We come together to create solutions for people with the most significant impact of disability and to find ways that these people who are really vulnerable to segregation and institutionalization achieve a quality of life that they dream of in inclusive communities as equal citizens. And that's what we're all about.
So, what are the most common issues surrounding disabilities in social justice?
Our focus is on people that are most significantly impacted by disability and are perceived to be difficult to support because of the complicated nature of their disabilities. So for those people, the common barriers are that people just assume that they don't have competence, that they aren't able to participate, that they don't have employment potential, that they can't perform in a neighborhood school classroom. And because of those assumptions that people make, without really getting to know people, segregation is often the biggest challenge.
So
even when other people with disabilities are included, people with the most significant impact of disability often are not.
So how do you go about dispelling these myths surrounding disability inclusion?
I think the best way is to tell stories. There are many, many success stories of people with really significant disabilities owning their own businesses, becoming public speakers, holding down full-time jobs, living in their own homes that they own, being equal participants in their churches, in their neighborhood garden clubs, coming straight out of institutions and into a life that's really worth living. And those stories speak volumes about what's possible if there's a committed support group to help a person live the life that they dream of. And it's the person's life, not the dreams of the people who support them, that's important.
So when you mention stories, is there any one success one that stands out for you?
I think one of my favorite stories is about a young man named Toby who lives in California, who lived for years in a California state institution and was restrained four or five times a day throughout many of the years of his institutionalization. And he was angry and anxious and was intent on finding something better for himself, and he made it clear that he wanted to get out of the institution. His family didn't have the ability to get him out or support him, but he was lucky to find, and I don't know how the connection was made, but there's a support agency in California that, and led by a TASH member. That support agency, the name of the support agency is Avenues, Inc. They got Tony into their into his own apartment. They supported him as he learned how to control his behaviors through means other than restraining Toby, because that's something that just causes terrible anxiety and frustration. And now he has a job. He is a known member in his community. He has his own apartment. He has meaningful roles throughout the day. He does not have a full-time job, but his life is filled up with meaningful activities that he's created for himself. He's taken vacations. He has a great life. And one of the things that Toby does really well is share his own story. So he's been to national conferences talking about the life that he now lives.
So, are there any challenges in establishing equality for people with disabilities?
Well, I think the chief challenge is that people assume so little. They expect so little. Children with significant disabilities are raised from a very early age in an environment that doesn't expect a lot. And parents, probably the number one influencer of how a child does is what their parents expect of them. The higher the expectations, the better. But parents get their expectations and support for their expectations fundamentally from the professional messages that they're getting. So it's really important that professionals supporting parents make it clear that high expectations are important, that they are realistic, that they're very valuable in the lives of children with disabilities and as they grow up.
So, what type of disability is most common in your work?
Well, we don't really think much about diagnostic groups. We don't label people with their diagnosis. Oh, we think they get that enough in the external world. But that said, we have a number of members who have labels of autism. We have a number of members who have labels of developmental disability or intellectual disability. We work with people who have labels of cerebral palsy. Those are all developmental disabilities, meaning that children have them from a very early age or from birth.
So, if you could send any one message about the work of TASH and the need for greater equality, what might you say?
Well, I think the work of TASH is all about social justice for everyone. When we begin to think about exceptions to that, then we create a slippery slide, man. So if we put a slippery or a social justice lens on every single thing, and one easy way to do that is to say, would I want that for my own child, or would I want that for me? And if what you're thinking of as acceptable for a person with a disability is not what you would want for your own life or for your own child, then it's not good enough. If we think about group homes, I don't want to live in a group home. I don't want to live in a place where people tell me when to get up and when to eat breakfast and when I can go do what I want to do for the day. I want to live in a place that supports my hopes and dreams. So I think that's the fundamental work of TASH, is to challenge all of us to think about what does social justice look like in the lives of individuals, and how can we best support that.
So, do you you work in partnership with any other groups?
We consistently work in partnership. We belong to three coalitions. We lead one. Our coalition work numbers, we have one coalition that numbers 22 organizations. We are part of one that's over 120 organizations. We also have important partnerships on projects. For example, we're doing some work right now on a guardianship survey. We wanted to find out how people first hear about guardianship and whether or not they're given all the viable alternatives that result in a much better life. So we have important partnerships with groups like the ACLU, Quality Trust, and the Autistic Self-Advocacy Network to get that work done.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
When it comes to disability advocacy, social justice is key. However, I would maintain social inclusion is also a key factor. When a person with a disability makes an effort to reach out to someone socially, to form a bridge of understanding, take a chance on getting to know somebody, to maybe expand their mind a little bit about their understanding of people by introducing them to another aspect of life. This can be a remarkable thing, because for the very first time, you can get somebody thinking about these issues, such as social justice, they might not have known. They might, for the first time, recognize the needs of someone that may or may not be being met. And if they're not, then a person decide, I want to stand beside this person with a disability, not because they need extra support per se, but because supporting my fellow human being is the right thing to do, to provide them with whatever opportunities I can, to be a part of their growth, their development, as a more complete person. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Canadians are being bought and sold. We can no longer ignore this reality. Each of the 27 million human trafficking victims around the globe has a unique story. 80% of victims are women. 50% are children. This is not only a global injustice, but a local reality. It is happening right now in my community. We are asking you to take action today. Visit endexploitation.com. Get informed and take action. British anti-slavery leader William Wilberforce once said, "Having heard all this, you may choose to look the other way. But you can never say again that you did not know. Only question now is what will you do? Join us and help eliminate human slavery in Canada."
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Barb Trader, Executive Director for TASH. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Kathy Snow from Disability is Natural. So tell me a little bit about Disability is Natural.
About our website?
Yes.
Well, it's based on, the name of it is based on part of a law in the United States, the Developmental Disabilities Act that was passed in the mid-70s, that says that disability is a natural part of the human experience, which I first heard that when my son Benjamin, who's now 27, Benjamin was 3 at the time, and Benjamin was born prematurely and all that jazz, and was diagnosed with cerebral palsy at the age of 4 months, and later some other diagnoses came. And I heard that when my son was 3, and I was like, yeah, disability is a natural part of life. I don't know why we make such a big deal out of it sometimes. There have always been people with disabilities in the world, and there always will be. And things that are not presently labeled as a disability, one day might. You know, I mean, doctors decide, you know, and then the government decides what medical conditions are being classified as disabilities or not. So my website is all about, and the work that I do, I also, I'm a book author and public speaker and trainer, but it's all about helping people acquire, hopefully, learn new ways of thinking, that disability is a natural part of life, and that all people with disabilities should be included and should be living the lives of their dreams and not be segregated and separated and be treated as second-class citizens.
So, how can we as a society dispel some of the myths surrounding disabilities?
I think one of the most important things, Cam, is for people with disabilities to get out there. I think that, you know, we no longer technically are supposed to have institutions anymore, but where I live now in the state of Texas, it probably has the most institutions of any state. I don't know, you know, what the status of it in Canada as far as people that are still, they might not call them institutions anymore, but living in big congregate settings. But even though we don't have that so much anymore, there are still too many people with disabilities, children and adults, who are essentially sort of still hidden away. They're in segregated, you know, special ed classrooms. They're in, you know, group homes. They're in sheltered workshops or other, you know, quote-unquote special programs where they're just with other people supposedly, quote-unquote, like them. And so they're not out in the mainstream of society. And I think that, you know, it's not unlike in our country in the civil rights movement, you know, back in the 1960s where people of color, you know, I mean, it was put against the law to discriminate against them. They, you know, didn't have certain jobs. They couldn't go in certain places, couldn't drink out of certain water fountains. I mean, it's a horrible legacy of our country. And it wasn't until people of color started taking their rightful place in society that it became not such a big deal. Oh, okay, well, he's a black person, not a big deal. I know that Canada's a lot further along than we are in a lot of those areas, but I think that just my son is an example. We'll go to a restaurant. He's 27 years old. He's, you know, great big strapping young man, uses a power wheelchair, has a beard, really cool guy, and we'll go to a restaurant. A lot of times the server will not give him a menu because they assume, I guess, that he uses a wheelchair, he also can't read. And so then we'll say, no, he needs a menu, or he'll say, I need a menu. And then they'll say, well, you know, ask me, well, what would he like to order? And I say, I don't know, you have to ask him. All of that, you know, it's a form of prejudice. I don't think it's intentionally mean-spirited. It is that people are ignorant. People have not had enough exposure to people with disabilities. And so I think that the more people with disabilities themselves are out there just doing ordinary things, going to restaurants, going to the mall, going to movies, and not as a group, you know, not, I mean, you know, people say, oh, we're going to take them on an outing, and there's 15 people with disabilities and, like, you know, three staff people. Well, that's not any kind of natural setting. That's not the way people really live. I mean, it's not the way they should live. And so I think that it's up to parents to get their children with disabilities involved in ordinary community activities. And, you know, all the things that my son has done, he took drama lessons as a child. He was in Cub Scouts. He was in, played T-ball. He did all those things that his sister did. And at first, it was sort of a novelty and a new thing. And then once people got to know him, it's like, oh, not a big deal. That's just Benjamin. Yeah, he, you know, his hands and feet do certain things kind of weird, or, you know, he uses a wheelchair or whatever. And so familiarity then takes the stigma away. So familiarity then would help another child who knew my son, if he met another child that had a disability, he'd say, oh, it's not a big deal because I know Benjamin, or I know Dylan who has Down syndrome, or I know Chris who has autism or whatever. So I think that people with disabilities, you know, we've got to take, in our families, we've got to take the responsibility to get out there and let people see that we're just like anybody else.
So, in your time working alongside individuals with disabilities to promote these ideals, is there any one success moment that stands out for you?
As far as the work that I do and the people that I've met?
Yes.
Well, I guess, the easiest one that comes to mind is my own son, Cam. But, you know, I could tell you other stories, too, but we just decided to treat Benjamin the way we would treat him if he didn't have a disability. Now, having said that, some people sort of take that to an extreme and say, oh, so, well, if he didn't have a disability, you shouldn't have got him a wheelchair, you know, and stuff. Like, no, I mean, you know, let's use our common sense here. But we realized that our daughter would always be included and would always be, you know, participating in things and going to college and, you know, working one day. And we just decided we're going to have the same expectations for Benjamin, and so we did, and so now he's earned his master's degree, and is like a lot of young people, when they finish college, he's looking for a job. And so I think that, I mean, I could tell you other stories of parents who have totally changed their attitudes about their children, that One mom came to a presentation I did at a conference, and she came up to me afterwards, and she had tears in her eyes, and she said she had a little daughter that was about 6 years old, had two daughters, like one was eight and one was six. The six-year-old had been diagnosed with autism when she was about, you know, 2 or 3 years old. And she came up to me with tears in her eyes, and she said, whenever both of our daughters were born, we started college funds for them. And, you know, just putting money away every month for college. She said, when our younger daughter, I'll call her Mary, I don't remember what her name was, you know, when our younger daughter Mary was diagnosed with autism, and we were told such horrible things about her, she said, we canceled the fund because we, you know, she'll never go to college. And she said, now I realize we're going to open that fund back. She said, our daughter, Mary, who has autism, can go to college just like her sister did. And that was, she said, as a result of, you know, reading my book or hearing me speak and, you know, all those kinds of things, you know, reading some of the articles on my website. And that's the thing, on our website, we have over 200 articles that are free that anybody can download and read them and, you know, get a taste of this or that or the other. So I mean, I could, you know, there are many stories like that. The other, I guess one of the most meaningful things to me is I speak to different audiences, and some audiences are educators and some are service providers and some are, you know, people with disabilities and families or whatever. And the nicest comments I get, a lot of people come up and, I mean, some people think I'm from another planet and they say, oh, you're not realistic and that kind of stuff. Well, that, they're free to have that opinion. Others, though, you know, parents will come up and say, oh, what you've said just really changed my life. But what I'm honored the most by, Cam, is when adults with disabilities come up and say, Kathy, I hope people are listening to you because I've been trying to say stuff like this my whole life. That disability is natural. Stop treating me like I'm, you know, a second-class citizen, whatever. And nobody's ever listened to me, Kathy. And I feel sad about that because I said, well, people should be listening to you. And they said, well, I hope that people are listening to you because you're saying exactly what I feel and what other people with disabilities feel. And that's really just because I'm not so smart, Cam. I mean, my greatest lessons are from people with disabilities themselves. I mean, you know, people think, oh, you're not realistic and stuff. It's like, well, let's go talk to people with disabilities themselves, and they will tell you. And if we listen to them, including children, I mean, very young children with disabilities, they're the real experts, not parents. I mean, we as parents like to think we're the experts, and we are in the sense that they're our children. But, you know, I don't have a developmental disability. I can never know what it's like to have cerebral palsy. I can only know what it's like to be my son's mom. So if I listen to him, if we listen to children, if we listen to adults with disabilities, then we learn. And that's how I've learned. Like I say, I'm not that smart. I couldn't have figured this out on my own. I've learned it from listening to people with disabilities themselves, including my son.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
Disability inclusion is absolutely a universal theme, in so much as no matter who you would ask connected to disability life, which in a greater context amounts to every family everywhere. It's just a matter of recognition. But no matter who you would ask, I think you would reach a consensus that individuals with disabilities have not only the right, but I maintain the obligation to be a part of the community, to be out there, living their lives with dignity and strength. Because for a person with a disability who doesn't take a chance on getting to know people, who doesn't express themselves, they're not living to their full potential. And they're denying the able-bodied community the chance to learn something about their fellow human beings. And that is something that shouldn't be allowed. A person with a disability shouldn't hide themselves away from the community, nor should we as a society take steps to shuffle them off to some out-of-the-way place. It's not fair to either side. The fact is, there are no sides. It's just people living their lives as best they know how. For a person with a disability, in something like a professional setting, there may be some modifications made to help that worker reach their best. But the end result of that is absolutely worth it. But on the other side of life, when it comes to things such as social matters, a person with a disability has every right to interact with those that they would want to pursue, a friendship or business relationship or what have you. They have every right to get out there and say, "Hi, how you doing?" to someone, to expect not just courtesy and respect, but inclusion. Should never be an afterthought, folks. You shouldn't go out of your way to be there, to be a friend, or someone who cares about a person with a disability. You should just do it because it's natural, because it's a part of life. Embracing diversity, folks. I know we as a society have taken a lot of steps forward, technological sense, when it comes to disabilities and diseases, our understanding. But it's as important never to lose the human sense of that, too. To never let it be said of us that our practices don't match our ideals. If we're going to talk about giving opportunities to a person with a disability to be part of the community should know this. Community should be educated about disability life. That can be done in the school system, but there is no better way to get to know about disability life than to actually spend some time talking to a person with a disability. The more time you spend, the less prevalent their condition starts to seem. If you're someone with a story of disability life, write HandyLink 4, HANDILINK, number 4, gmail.com. Always love to hear from you folks at home. It's kind of a catch-22 problem sometimes, folks. We expect people with disabilities will know all the routines and customs of society. But when you hear about cases like institutions and group homes that are essentially isolating a person with a disability from that society, how are they supposed to learn? How are they to know what it takes to be a part of the community if the community is not there? Now, don't get me wrong. I'm sure there are many of these facilities do really good work and truly do provide benefit for people with disabilities. The important thing is balance. Balance between the support they need and providing the inclusion they deserve. Now, sometimes this can be a hard balance to strike upon, and it is the responsibility of every member of society to stand by an individual with a disability. It's everyone in society's responsibility to keep an open mind and to say, "I'm going to be someone who understands. I'm going to be someone who's supportive." One of my previous guests, Samantha Newmarch, did a very simple thing. She held a door for a person who had difficulty doing so. Was it a simple everyday act? Or on some level, was it saying, "I respect your right to access. I respect that you have as much right to be here as anyone else." And that, recognizing that respect, recognizing there are people with the wisdom and the understanding we should all have, that can be a life-changing experience. For you realize that you're not facing struggles without a community behind you. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.